Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jill Larson on Star Dish Radio. Tune in and stay tuned. You never know who will drop by.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Star Dish Radio on the Blog Talk Network. Today is March 2nd, 2010. I'm Joanne, your host. My number here is 347-945-5423. Any guests in the chat room, please take a minute to go ahead and register so you can participate in the chat. March 4th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, the incredible Ronnie Marmo from General Hospital will be stopping by, so make sure you come back on Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Getting right to tonight's guest. For over a decade and across a staggering 247 half hours of television, he was America's father, as quintessential caring dad Howard Cunningham on the classic ABC sitcom Happy Days. He captured the hearts of millions of adoring fans, and even though he has gone on to enjoy a full career as a character actor in the years since the show wrapped, he's still best remembered as Marion's husband, as Richie and Joni's dad. And he has come by the show tonight to reminisce and to remember, so please give a warm Star Dish Radio welcome to the incredible icon, Tom Bosley.
Hi there.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine, dear, and I want to thank you for that lovely eulogy.
Oh, well, you're so welcome. It's so well-deserved. I have goosebumps. I've been a fan of yours. I grew up watching you, so forgive me if I'm a little starstruck.
And where was that where you grew up?
I grew up in Yonkers, New York.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. We have a lot of New York fans.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I will get to Happy Days, but I want, just to start, if you don't mind, to start with your early years and how acting became your career, how it fell in your path.
Well, actually, it happened accidentally. When I got out of the Navy in 1946 at the end of the war, I intended to go to law school, and I was a native of Chicago and living in Chicago at the time. And because I got out of the service in July, I couldn't get enrolled into DePaul University, where I wanted to go, because it was too late in the fall season, so I had to go for night school. And unfortunately, most of the lawyers who were teaching at night school were too busy in court, and they never showed up.
Wow.
So I left, and a friend of mine was going to a radio school, and I always had kind of a yen to be a sports announcer. And they taught there, and I went there and got involved in radio and got involved in different aspects of radio. And they had acting classes, and I got bit. And
wow.
I started to do some radio in Chicago, and then I joined a couple of theater groups. And that was the beginning. And then I did a lot of summer stock in and around Chicago and finally decided if I was going to go anywhere, it would have to be either California or New York. And I looked in the mirror and I said, no, New York is better for me. So
okay.
I tramped to New York to try and start a good career in the theater.
And you very well did. You went on to portray Fiorella LaGuardia. How did that come about, your Tony Award performance?
Well, it's very funny because I was living in a building where the elevator operator was theater conscious beyond belief. And he stopped me one day and he said, you know, Mr. Bosley, they're auditioning for a musical about LaGuardia. And you ought to look into it because you look a lot like him. And so I called the agent that I had at the time, and the next thing I knew, I was auditioning for it, and they called me back three times, and the last time I was sure, if anything, I was going to be the understudy, and there they handed me the part.
And that ran for a little less than 2 years, right?
That's correct.
Now, I heard a funny story, and I'm going to see if you remember it. During one of your performances, there was a woman in the front of the audience. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'll tell you what's funny about it.
Huh?
You're talking about Rosemary Clooney.
Okay.
And Rosemary Clooney broke water and started to give birth to her oldest son. And she was sitting there with Jose Ferrer, and we were plowing through a scene on stage while she was having problems, and they got her out of the theater. And years later, when we became pretty good friends, we kidded about it. But the interesting thing is, her son became a very good actor out here in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And I've never met him, and I've worked with some of the people that work with him, and I said, listen, if you ever run into him again, have him get in touch with me, because he was born while I was earning my living.
Wow.
And that's exactly what happened.
That's crazy. I can't believe that you've never met him. That's insane. If I would have known that you've never met him, I would have tried to move heaven and earth to have him call in on this show.
Aren't you sweet?
Oh, wow. That's insane. But there was another story that I heard, too, about a certain president's wife.
We were doing Fiorello out of town in preparation for bringing it to New York. And we were playing in Philadelphia. And in the middle of one scene where I was trying so hard to concentrate, because when you're out of town, you're you're learning new things to do in the show. Your lines are different, and you have to concentrate so hard. And this woman was sitting in the front row with a purse, and the purse had a sort of a string to it, and she was swinging it around and enjoying the music and everything. And then I found out after the performance it was Jackie Kennedy.
Funny.
And she came back in New York with the soon-to-be president right after Jack Kennedy had won his first primary.
Uh-huh.
And she brought him back to see the show, and it was quite a thrill for me.
Oh, that's fabulous. I love hearing stories like that. It's wow. So after Fiorello, you went on to do a lot more theater and television shows, and I'm interested in hearing your stories on how you got into the Dean Martin show.
Well, that was very strange. The producer of the Dean Martin show was a fellow named Greg Garrison, and was a very successful producer and really made the Dean's television career. And oddly enough, before all of this, I had been riding a bus one day, and he said to me, aren't you from Chicago? And I said, yes. And he said, didn't you go to Lakeview High School? And I said, yes. And he said, well, my name is Greg Garrison, but it was a different name, his real name. Greg Garrison was his theater name.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out he graduated high school with my brother, and he knew I was an actor, and he had me come and audition for the show and said, listen, he says, we're going to do comedy skits all this year, and I'd love you to be a part of it. And that's how that happened. And I had so much fun doing that show.
Now, I would imagine working with Dean Martin and that cast was incredible. From what I understand, he really never rehearsed or did anything.
Well, he had a standby that did all the rehearsals. But when we got to the little skits that we did, he would come on, and one of us would guide him from one spot to the next, and someone else would take over. And one night, early in the probably maybe the second or third week, we had to make a fast exit through a door, he and I, and we rushed through the door, and we were going so fast, there was a piano out there that stopped us, and he was panting. He was out of breath, and he looked at me, and he said, I didn't know you were on this show. And I turned to him and said, I didn't know you were either. and we became good friends.
Oh, wow. I had the pleasure of interviewing his daughter not too long ago, Dina.
I never met the children. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
She came one She came one night to see him when we were doing the show, but I didn't get the opportunity to meet her.
Wow, I would have made this show. This is your life, Tom. I would have brought all these people on for you if I would have known that.
Aren't you sweet?
Now, when you were, I see that you did a couple, well, one or two episodes of a soap opera called Port Charles. When
I
you
did
were
one.
Young, one episode, okay.
Yeah.
When you were younger, you had a thing for the radio soap operas, didn't you?
Well, I never did any radio soap operas.
Okay.
That's not true. I did a couple. There was a radio show called, in Chicago, you have to understand that in Chicago in the 40s, 30s, 40s, and near the end of the 40s, early 50s, Chicago had more radio than any other city in the country. All the soap operas came from Chicago.
Oh.
And there was one show in particular called Scattergood Baines about an elderly gentleman, I believe he was a doctor or something. And I had just passed my auditions with NBC, which allowed me to appear on these soap operas.
Huh?
And I did this one soap opera called Scattergood Baines. And it's the gentleman that played it, who at the end of the show, he and I had a scene together. And when I say scene, I mean we're talking to each other through a microphone, right? It's radio.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, with maybe one page left on the script, the gentleman passed out, got sick, and fainted.
Wow.
And the producer was in the booth, and he looked at me, and I read the rest of the lines and imitated him on the last page. I did my lines and his lines. So fortunately, he was all right. He was just ill, that's all.
Right, right. Wow, that's crazy.
It is.
To see that even happen. So you went from, well, you did Port Charles, and a friend of mine told me to ask about your experience on a show that you did, One Tree Hill.
Well, I had a wonderful time doing that. It came out of nowhere. They filmed that in, you hear my dog?
I hear those dogs.
In the background. That's because someone is delivering some food to the front door.
Oh.
Sorry for the interruption.
Don't worry about it. This is like home. Pretend you're talking to your best friend.
I believe we filmed that in... oh, instead it's my... I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it.
What happened was they filmed that in Wilmington, Delaware, I believe.
Yes.
No, Wilmington, Carolina. Oh, I can't remember. But it was a wonderful
experience. I think they film in the
Carolinas. Huh?
I think they do film in the Carolinas.
Yes. There was a big studio there. And I went there for a week, and I enjoyed doing the show, but what was even happier for me is that I was surprised at how many theater people from New York that I knew we're now living in this area. It's so beautiful. It's right on the water, and it's a lovely town. And hold on just a moment, please.
Right ahead. For those of you just tuning in, we're on the phone with the incomparable Tom Bosley.
Yes, my wife is taking money out of my pocket to pay the food bill. We just had some food delivered to us because we're too lazy to go out tonight. And we don't want to miss American Idol.
Oh, geez, you know, I forget that you're so far behind the time than I am. I'm on the East Coast.
Oh, don't tell me anything about it if you watch
it. No, I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it.
Okay.
No, I didn't. It's
right,
being
dear,
recorded.
I'm on yours again.
That's cool. You like American Idol.
I started to tell you that there were so many theater people living in the Wilmington area.
Mm-hmm.
And a dear friend who I had known since he started, both of us started early in our career, Pat Hingle,
okay.
A wonderful actor, was living there. So I got to renew friendships at the same time while I was getting paid to do a job.
Oh, wonderful. So you kind of like reconnected. So that was a really good experience.
That was wonderful.
That's great. Now, I have a caller from Coral Springs, Florida. This is Linda I'm bringing on with us. Linda, say hi to Tom.
Hello. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Oh, I am just listening to your stories. Oh, love it. You have the most pleasant voice on the radio. I don't know.
I do, but right now it's kind of froggy. I've had sort of a cough.
Not at all. I can't explain it, but you have such a great voice. How are you, Tom?
I'm just fine, thank you, dear.
Good, good. Gosh, I'm a little tongue-tied. I don't know what to say, Joanne.
it's amazing, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
We're doing vocally what a lot of people do on television on computers these days.
That's true. And I'm usually on in the chat room, but I decided to call in tonight, which is a very rare occasion. But
I much prefer chatting in person than chatting on the computer.
That's true. Well, I just had a quick question for you.
Sure.
What sort of friendship did you have with Mr. Paul Newman?
Well, you bring a tear to my eye immediately with that. Paul and I started out almost together in about 1948 at a summer theater in Woodstock, Illinois, about 45 miles outside of Chicago. And he was the most gorgeous guy I ever saw in my life. And the first day we were there, and I said, you know something? I said, I don't care, and I don't know if you can act, but you're going to be the biggest star that Hollywood ever had, because he was so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And we worked together for a year. And then, of course, he went on. I, as a matter of fact, was with him when he married his first wife and had his first child. And then later on, of course, he went on his way and I went on mine. And then when he was a big star, I got an opportunity to do a movie with him, The Secret War of Harry Frigg, I believe it was called, Private Frigg. I can't even remember it. And we sort of renewed friendship. Hello?
Yes.
Okay. And then the last time I saw Paul, I was doing Cabaret on Broadway, and he was doing a revival of Our Town, and on my night off, I went to see him, see the show, and backstage afterward, there were so many luminaries that came back to see him, and I just sat there quietly, and I was kind of embarrassed because I realized that the dressing room I had in Cabaret was bigger than his. And he was the star of the show. But after everybody left, and he and I sort of chewed the fat about old times, and all of a sudden he came up to me and he put his arms around me and gave me a big hug and said, you know something? Outside of my brother, there's no one I know who's lived as long as you have. And I just started to cry while he was hugging me. And I was so stunned, I had no idea the illness that was creeping up on him. And Paul was a couple of years older than I am, but I had such great respect for him and admired all the accomplishments he did. I don't think there's another performer in Hollywood that provided the charitable opportunities, with not only with his foods, but the things that his charities did for kids through the years. It was just remarkable.
Okay.
And I miss him as a friend, and I miss him as a wonderful talent.
I need to get a Kleenex. Oh, my gosh.
Gosh, yeah.
I can give you one of mine, but we're not close to each other.
I know.
Well, you know what? If everyone had, you know, at least one of those kind of friendships throughout their lifetime, it's more than what anybody could hope or dream or ask for, really.
You have to understand something about actors. We are all part of a group of people that occasionally we get to work with each other. But if we don't, we never lose the respect we have for each other's talents, even if they're strangers. So it's, you know, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm 82 years old, and I pick up the paper. I do what George Burns used to do. He said the first thing in the morning he looks in the obituary column, and if his name isn't there, he gets out of bed. But I lose friends. I lose actor friends. I lose some that I never met, never worked with, but admired their work, and it's tough. And I think everybody, no matter what profession they're in, goes through these periods when they get older.
I believe
it. It was a pleasure speaking with you. I'm sure you have other callers. Thank you so much, Joanne. Tom, it was great speaking with you, and take care of yourself. And
thank you. You're in Florida?
I am in Florida, yes.
Is the weather finally nice down there?
Oh, it's still a little chilly, but you know what? You won't hear me complaining.
All right. Take
nothing
care.
Nothing like what Joanne has to endure each day, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Right. All right, Linda.
Okay, take care. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Yeah, she's right about that. And up here in Buffalo, it's 30 degrees right now.
You're in Buffalo?
Yeah, I'm crazy. I'm in Buffalo.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
It's all right. It's not that bad.
It's the old joke. I spent a year there one night.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, that story is amazing. And again, I have to just reiterate how fascinated I am and how honored I am that you agreed to do this show, because, like I said, I've been a big fan of yours for a long time.
Well,
and this is like a true honor to me. Happy days. Let's talk about how you got that role and the first time you met Gary Marshall.
All right. I had done a series, a short-lived series at Paramount with Sandy Duncan. And...
Uh-huh.
The show, after a while, flew away. And when the Happy Days situation came along, the casting director, I was in New York doing something for City Center, and I got a script sent to me. And it was Happy Days. And my agent said, you know, you're going to get more than one script to look at. And I said, I know. I said, but I'll read it anyway. And there was a scene in the script where Richie Cunningham is in the shower and his father is sitting on a closed toilet seat having a discussion with him about what he's going to do that night and so forth. And then in the background, you hear Marion's voice yelling out, "Come on, guys, Milton Berle will be on in just a couple of minutes." Well, when I read that scene, I said, you know, I'm not going to wait for anything else. I'm going to see if this works. And so I accepted the role. And we did a pilot. I think this is in 72. We did a pilot in October. They called us on Thanksgiving Day to tell us that we were going on the air in February. We had no scripts. Not all the people were cast yet. We had no producers. Nothing was lined up. And the day that we had to go to work, they hired two young writers to be the initial producers of the show. And in those days, of course, we were shooting one camera, not three cameras.
Right.
So, and we had no scripts. So it got to the point where the first few weeks, we would be shooting scenes from different scripts as they were written. We did a lot of clothes changing and a lot of set changing, but we got through it because we had a time limit to get these shows on the air.
Right.
And then we finally got on the air, and I think we did 39 shows in the first year and a half. And
we settled
into what became something rather phenomenal.
It certainly was, and it really took on a life of its own. Was there at any point, I mean, you guys were on the air from, what, 74?
Well, 73 through 83.
It
was 11 years, 10 calendar years and 11 television seasons.
Okay. Now, was there any time where during that time span that you thought maybe it had its run and you wanted to get out while it was on top?
No, there was only the last year, and I've always thought that the very last year was a gift from the network to us to allow us to give us the opportunity to really think about what we were all going to do next.
Right.
And I was, we were all very grateful for that.
Yeah.
But we knew it, you know, everything has to end. It's the way the business is.
Yeah. And nothing lasts forever, that's for sure. But that was a good run. Now, I mean, let me ask you, you've done several television shows besides Happy Days. You did Father Dowling. You did Murder, She Wrote. Now, fast forward to this generation in television, what do you see the differences of good and bad from those days to now?
Well, everything that I see scares me. There's so many shows that are alike. And this so-called realistic television, to me, is boring, is cheap entertainment. The business does not provide opportunities for many actors are frozen out of the a chance to get a series. It doesn't bother me that much because, you know, nobody wants anybody that's my age anymore. And although I do have a movie coming out in April.
Yeah, with that you did with Jennifer Lopez.
Yes. But anyway, I'm just disappointed in what television has become.
Right.
We've lost the humanity in it. The language is too different. You know, we were able to do things in a suggestive way that were humorous.
Right.
But it's not done that way anymore. You know, and if there's a medical show, they're all the same. If it's a cop show, they're all the same.
Yeah.
It's like the news show, the news at 6.
Right.
One white, one black, one oriental.
Right.
You know, I'm not criticizing it. It's just that everybody follows the same line over and over again.
It's almost like their creative juices have just stopped flowing and they're doing these wash, rinse, repeat shows.
Oh, absolutely. And the kind of writers, you know, I broke into television in New York where every one of those writers that wrote the hour shows, they were brilliant. They were wonderful writers.
Right.
The Rod Serlings and the fellas like that, they were just talented writers.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not criticizing the writers today, but they're writing what they're asked to write.
Right.
Who Wants to Be Funny? Is This a Good Joke? Six guys working on one page of the script to make it funnier.
Right.
It's just hard to go along with. And,
yeah.
You know, I had to go through that too. And so now it doesn't bother me, and I can criticize it. Because I miss what television was like.
Right. Well, I have a question from the chat room, and they're asking, what are your favorite TV shows today, if any, or how about favorite TV show of all time?
All right. I don't know if I have a favorite TV show of all time. I can tell you that I watch very few current shows.
Uh-huh.
I watch almost everything that's on the Food Channel.
Me too. I love Food Network.
But it saves me from making a pig out of myself. I watch, one of my favorite shows is House.
Okay.
And another one is Bones.
Okay.
Which I think they're two wonderfully conceived shows.
Right.
And then when the hour gets a little late, you just heat it up, Bob, when I come out. Don't worry about it. I'm talking to my wife. She said, should she bring my food to me? And I said, no, I'll come out there later. It's fine,
she's
darling. Thank you. I mentioned House. I mentioned Bones.
Right.
And there are a lot of the shows that I just don't pay any attention. Oh, I tell you, later in the evening, we turn on and watch all the old Frasiers.
Oh, mm-hmm.
All the old wonderful comedy shows, which are great pre-going-to-bed things to watch.
Right.
And, you know, your audience is obviously, many of it is at a different age, and they're waiting for something to change for them, so...
It's true. It's a sad state when every channel you flip on now is either Maury Povich doing DNA tests or, Bad Girls on the Oxygen Network. It's,
I know.
You can't watch a TV show without hearing that bleep. You know, if it has to be bleep, it shouldn't be on TV.
Right. You're absolutely right.
You know, and I mean, I have two kids that I, you know, monitor what they watch, and it's really kind of hard, you know.
How old?
I have one that's 17 now and one that's 9.
Okay.
You know, but it's still, you know, reality TV's been around a while. I mean, I like watching the reality shows as far as the cooking shows. I like American Idol. You know,
yeah,
I even got sucked into The Bachelor, but it just drove me crazy. But you know,
well, it's getting to the point where it's contrived somehow.
Right, right. It's like a train wreck.
They're all contrived.
Well, anyhow.
The so-called reality does not become a reality. It becomes a contrived reality.
Exactly. Everybody wants to be famous for just being...
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. Well, we have Thomas here. Thomas, say hi to Tom.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Where are you living?
I live in Arizona where it's hot.
Okay. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. My favorite baseball team trains in Arizona.
Oh, the Diamondbacks?
No, I'm sorry to say. And when you say die hard, it really means die hard because they haven't won in 100 years. I'm a Cub fan.
Oh, well, that's cool.
And they train in Mesa every winter.
Thomas,
wow, didn't know that. Oh, I'm an artist. I like drawing and painting and stuff and stuff like that. And I sent my artwork to Henry Winkler, who was on Happy Days with you, and he loved my artwork. So I was just wondering what type of artwork you like photos or paintings or what do you collect and stuff like that.
Well, I love paintings. I'm tired of photos because too many of them are of me. And I do like art. I like modern art, and I like historic art. art that the kind of art that we grew up as children to learn about. The master.
Do you have a favorite artist?
You know, I don't know whether I do or not. There was a young artist from Colombia named Orlando. Oh, I can't even think of his last name. And we met him years ago, and he did some wonderful paintings, a couple of which we have in our home. But he was the kind of an artist who, in the middle of something that was successful, he would stop and then all of a sudden go into Japanese art or go into some other kind of art. So he was what I would call a phase artist, going from one to the other. But I just love art in general. I had the pleasure of being in the Prado once in Madrid when I was there. And I just love to go to art museums.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm glad you love art and stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, people call me Tom when I was little, but I'm Thomas now. But that's what they called me when I was younger, and
well,
poor Tommy.
Well, let me tell you, I was born Thomas, and then I became Tommy, and then I became Tom.
Yeah, I was different names when I was little, huh?
And
okay,
my stepson's name was also Thomas, but we called him Tommy.
That's wonderful. Okay, I gotta go. Thank you very much for answering my questions. Thank you very much. Bye.
My pleasure.
Bye, Thomas. Very sweet. Nice questions. It's nice to have fans, you know, ask you something different, you know, instead of the same mundane questions you probably get asked a gazillion times.
Right.
Now, I heard a story about Aaron Spelling, and I want to know if this is true. Any pilot that he put on, you had to be in it because they were always hits?
I did many pilots for him that became successful. I did the original Love Boat, which they threw out because they changed the entire permanent cast of that show.
Okay.
And when Love Boat closed, Aaron threw this gigantic party in which they were going to honor each guest star that they had in increments. The first ones, the 100th one, the 200th one, so forth and so on. And
right.
Cloris Leachman and I were the first stars that he ever hired to do a Love Boat.
Oh, okay.
And aside from that, I had known him. My favorite story is I had been doing Happy Days for maybe 5 or 6 weeks. And I get a call from Aaron Spelling because I'd done all these pilots that he filmed as a guest that became successful. I can't even think of them off the top of my head.
Right.
But he called me up and he said, I'm doing a new show. And it's the one, I can't even think of the name of it, with the three girls as cops.
Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels. He says, there's a wonderful role in it for you. And I said, Aaron, I said, you obviously don't turn on your television or you don't read the paper. I said, I'm working in Happy Days. And he said, well, I'm glad you're working, and I'm sorry you can't do the show. Then about, maybe a month later, we're rehearsing a script at Paramount for Happy Days. And a guard comes in with a note and hands me a note, and it says, watch, what's the show again? With the girls?
Charlie's Angels.
Thank you. Watch Charlie's Angels tonight. You see, when you're 82, you forget a lot of things. So
I'm 40, and I forget everything. Don't worry about it.
Okay, so I turn on the television show that night, and here's a guy going up to David Doyle, the actor, and he says, are you Bosley? And David Doyle says, this is in the script, David Doyle says, no, it's Bosley, like the guy on Happy Days. So I got such a kick out of that. But he was wonderful. He was so good to me, and I just loved his work. He had good people around him, and he knew what television, he knew what audiences wanted to see.
Yeah, he did definitely produce a lot of hits. So he wanted you for the role of Charlie, the man behind the speaker.
That's right. Who he named Bosley.
Yes. And I'll tell you, you have one of those voices. Linda is right. You have definitely one of the most recognizable voices in entertainment, right up there with like James Earl Jones. And you just know your voice. You hear a voiceover, you know right away who it is.
Yeah.
And I definitely could have seen you as a sportscaster, and you have a very endearing voice, a very warm voice.
I appreciate that. I can't tell you how many times in my career I've gotten into an elevator, and just by opening up my mouth, people knew who I was.
Oh, I believe it. I definitely believe it. And I would definitely be one of those people, like, oh, my God, it's Mr. C. I would be one of those people.
That's right.
So now, the cast of Happy Days, you got Henry Winkler, Donnie Most, Anson Williams, Aaron Moran, Ron Howard. Do you keep in touch with all of them, or have you?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. Mary and I talk to quite often.
Okay.
And Donnie Most I talk to quite often.
Wonderful.
Henry's too busy, and Ron is even busier.
Yes.
But I saw Ron down here in the desert last year. He was honored at the Palm Springs Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to share some time together.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Now, when he was a kid, did you think he would be where he is now?
Yes, because when he started on Happy Days, he was going to Southern Cal University, taking film editing and directing. He wanted to be a director.
Right.
And when he got on the show, he didn't have time to go to USC, so he took some separate classes at Valley College in the Valley in L.A. And when we were filming or rehearsing, if he wasn't needed on the set, he would go next door to another set and stand behind the cameras. And learn and learn and learn, and that's what he wanted to be, was a director.
Wow. That's amazing. And now Henry Winkler just had a statue, I think it was a year ago maybe? Or was it just recently? He had a bronze statue.
Yes, in Milwaukee.
Yes.
And we all went to the unveiling.
Okay.
And it was a wonderful weekend. All the kids were there, and Gary Marshall, and they did a beautiful job. And the city of Milwaukee just welcomed us. You would have thought that we had won the World Series, driving streets and open cars and waving to the fans. It was just a delight.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, this next person I'm bringing on, Tom, is Tony from Chicago.
Okay.
Tony, say hi to Tom.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine, Tony. What area of the city do you live in?
I live near the South Loop area.
The where?
Near the
South Loop?
Just south of the Loop, yeah.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. All the burlesque shows used to be down there.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little young for that. I'm like 43. So I'm a little young
okay,
for that.
Okay, you're a kid.
But I'm glad you mentioned that you were the Cub fan, and I'm a Cub fan too. You know, I live a little south of the Loop. I'm a Cub fan, and I am so, you know, diehard too, and I'm sick of the 100 years too. So, you mentioned Happy Days. I was a big fan of that show for many years, for like close to 9 years, because it started like real early for me. I tuned in until 76, so I was kind of young, you know, back in grammar school then. But what can you tell me? What is your all time favorite Happy Day episode you did?
Well, you know, that's very hard for me to, because I did 255 shows. Henry and I were the only two that did all of the shows. In fact, I thought maybe Henry didn't do all of the shows, but I guess he did. It's so hard to pick out the one that's the favorite. I can tell you one that stands out in my memory because it had quite an emotional effect on all of us. And it was an episode where Chachi, by mistake, leaves something on in the kitchen at Arnold's that causes the place to burn down.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Now, the next show, the night of that show, we were put in a room and not allowed to come out of it while they burned the set, while they ruined the set. And then we had to play scenes once we came out to see what happened to it. And it was so hard for us to see this place destroyed. And it just left a very strong emotional impression on all of us. So that's the one that I think I will remember the most.
As much as anybody else, because I've seen it, because I saw that episode, and it really affected me, and I saw how Chachi was, people were still reeling about it. Chachi
right.
was still watching about it most of all. And then when he told everybody that he was the one to set the fire, and then I saw Fonzie just got on his case about it. I mean, man, oh, man, that was a powerful episode, powerful.
And the other one that caused a little consternation was the last show, because Gary Marshall thought, and we agreed with him, that there had to be a moment at the end of that show to thank the audience. And I don't know whether you remember, but we all had a drink in our hand to toast.
Yes.
It was a wedding scene,
mm-hmm.
and I looked straight into the camera to wish everybody happy days. I forgot what I said.
I think I remember the line. I said, "And we thank you for coming in our homes for many years."
That's exactly right. Thank you. And there was some criticism that, oh, why did you break the fourth wall and all of that stuff? And Gary said, look, the audience kept us on for 11 years, and we wanted to thank them.
Right.
And you know, it when I do a show, a play, and I travel all over the country, there's no way in the world that I would think of walking off the stage without thanking the audience for coming. And appreciating not only what they saw, but they're there because I'm there, and it's my way of thanking all of these people for the wonderful years that they've been entertained by me and those I've worked with.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. I wish most actors still had those ethics.
Yes, well, listen. When you grow so fast, so young, it takes you a little longer to learn things.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tony.
My pleasure. And Tom, thanks a lot. All the best to you.
Thank you, Tony. And let's try and have a good year.
For the Cubs. That's right.
All right.
Take care, buddy. Take care,
bye. Bye. Those Cubs, huh? Wow. They give you a run for your money. Now, did you ever watch Happy Days as it aired?
For a while I did, you know, and of course I had the shows.
Right.
And, as I got older, the show stayed the same, I guess.
Yeah.
And I looked
yeah.
the same. But I'm just grateful that there are still areas in which they still watch it, and that's fun.
Yeah, for a while it was on TV Land or Nick at Night.
Well, we started that, you know. We were one of the first shows that did Nick at Night. We all went to New York for a big celebration. So we were very excited about all that.
Yeah, what I love about that with TV Land and Nick at Night is that it gives the other generations a chance to experience what we did, you know, watching stuff like that. I think now they're running TV on TV Land. I think they're running like the Cosby Show now and Roseanne episodes now. They change it every so often, you know, for generations. But, you know, I'll always be partial to my Happy Days. Those were my favorite of all time. I have one more caller before I let you go have your supper.
Okay, dear.
California number, area code 310. What's your name?
Hi, Tom. This is Vince.
Vince? Hi, Vince.
Yeah. Hi, how are you? First of all, I'm a big fan, and I got three things that I want to say to you. First of all, a lot of people don't remember or are too young to remember, but I loved when you did the voice on Wait Till Your Father Gets Home.
Oh, my God.
That was a great, great series.
You know, I was doing that show while we were doing Happy Days, and they recorded it at Paramount. And the biggest criticism is that a lot of people were upset because the so-called heavy in the picture looked like Richard Nixon, if you remember.
Right.
But it was so much fun to do. And let me tell you that Alan Alda tried to do a live show, not cartoon, and it had the same exact quality, the same family and everything, and it just didn't work.
Right.
But Wait Till Your Father Comes Home was a great memory for me, and we had so much fun doing it.
And it was a great memory for me, too, because, it dealt with a lot of realistic things that were happening back then, too.
That's right.
So... But the other two things that I wanted to bring up, one is I've been in the acting industry for a long time, and you know it's just so hard to find great venues to do stand up comedy, and now it's all has changed, and I've been having a hard time.
Wait, you're an actor?
Yes, I've been doing stand up comedy, and also too I have done some shows, but mostly like background work.
Okay.
Let me give you a
advice that I once heard Danny Kaye give to comedians.
Okay.
You got to go somewhere where you can fail.
Right.
Somewhere where nobody knows you and you can make all the mistakes in the world that you can. Because that's what you're going to learn from. You're going to learn about yourself. You're going to learn about what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And don't ever be afraid to fail. It's a learning process.
Right. And my final question to you is, other than Ron Howard, were you or any of the other members on Happy Days a big fan of Howard Stern's, and would you ever think about doing his show?
I wouldn't. I never would ask. I've never asked anybody. I don't know whether Howard Stern was... existed then, but I'm not a fan of his. I don't appreciate
his
kind of humor, and I still to this day don't understand why he's on television or radio.
Right, or you mean on the radio, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, it was nice talking to you.
Thank you.
And once again, I just loved Happy Days, so you guys are so great. Did a great job on it.
Listen, son, follow your dream, and you have to put into it 100% of yourself.
I will.
More.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you. Well, Tom, I swear I could keep you on this radio all day and just talk to you.
I'm getting hungry.
Calls, and I have to say, make sure you say thank you to your beautiful wife for loaning you out for a little while to entertain your fans and giving us a little insight of Tom Bosley behind the actor, so to speak, and hear some wonderful, lovely stories. Before I let you go, can I ask you to do me a favor and do a promo for Star Dish Radio?
Sure.
I'm already recording, so you could just say, hi, this is Tom Bosley, you know, on Star Dish Radio, and I'm ready whenever
Star
you are.
Star Dish?
You can, Star Dish. Mm-hmm.
Now?
Go right ahead.
Hi, I'm Tom Bosley, and I want to tell you what a great time I had on Star Dish Radio, and I hope all of you will join in and listen.
Thank you. Tom Bosley, it's been an honor. Ladies and gentlemen, a legendary icon sat here and talked with us tonight. Applause, everyone. And now he's off to go have supper with his beautiful wife and watch American Idol. Tom, thank you so, so much.
Thank you, dear. I appreciate it.
A wonderful night.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Oh, gosh, I don't even know what to say to all that. I'm just, like, tongue-tied. I'm still twisted and in awe of the fact that Tom Bosley was on Star Dish Radio. It's just, I know you guys had some other questions. I'm sorry that I missed it, but Tom Bosley was on Star Dish Radio. Okay, well, March 4th, come back, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for Ronnie Marmo from General Hospital. And on Friday, March 5th, Jennifer Behrens, who also was on General Hospital at one point, but is doing many, many other things, and she wants to talk about an event that she is hosting for a very good cause. So please make sure you tune in for that. And yes, Jewel, I do have sound effects on Star Dish Radio. So here we go. I'm going to let you guys go. With a few little things that I got going on here. Here, Jewel, this is just for you. Good night, everybody. Talk to you all on Thursday with Ronnie Marmo.
All right, this is our mic.
Hi, this is January Lavoie, better known as Noelle Ortiz, the pie baking waitress from the Bonjour Cafe, and you are listening to Star Dish Radio.
Hi, this is Larry Minetti, and I'm on Star Dish Radio.